Hi everyone, we have such a fun episode for you today. We bring on the one and only Billy Barnett. We have a bit of an insider connection as Alex happens to be married to him. But first of all, we have to say congratulations to the two of them on their new baby, Cosmo. And we have such a fun conversation about Billy's perspectives on competition, his training, and also we get into probably a far too long story about trail running in Albania. So please enjoy this episode, and we had such a blast talking with Billy. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, Exoskin, who have generously sponsored this episode and continue to bring the best socks, toe socks, compression sleeves, long sleeve, shorts, you name it, in terms of clothing and compression, they make it. It is absolutely amazing. I cannot say enough about how wonderful their products are. And they are launching a new line very soon. So if you'd like to check that out, to get 20% off, use code COTR21. That is COTR21 to get 20% off your first order. Exoskin has stood by me through thick and thin and many, many days of running. So I would highly recommend checking this brand out. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Coaches on the Run podcast.
This is Alex.
And Alyssa.
We're both full-time coaches, and we're here to answer your common and not so common trail and ultra questions.
Hello, my name is Billy Barnett. I live in Volcano, Hawaii, and like to be outside. And welcome to Coaches on the Run podcast.
Well, Billy, thanks for coming on. It is exciting to talk to you. Getting such an amazing guest on is really such a huge privilege, but I think we have a bit of an insider reason for getting you on. But in all seriousness, we're super lucky to talk to you. And I've known you for a few years, more from a distance than Alex. And I know you have some really interesting training philosophies and thoughts on running, as well as a long and fantastic journey in running. So I'm super excited to get into this deeper with you. And I guess my first question is, how did you get into ultra running? And what is your sporting / running background in that?
Okay, I guess when I was in seventh grade, I kind of got into just health and fitness in general. My parents gave me a membership to a gym and a book called Body for Life. When I was in seventh grade, and I sort of read that and just kind of like really fell in love with just like kind of weightlifting and just fitness in general. And I studied exercise physiology at college at Virginia Commonwealth University. And from there, just kind of stumbled, discovered ultra running when I was in college, and just kind of fell in love with that. Just the kind of, just endurance in general has kind of just been a passion.
So I will drag it out of you a little more. What got you specifically into running, and like, how did you find the sport of ultra?
I guess just lifeguarding. I was a lifeguard during the summer in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And then on my breaks, it was like long breaks, I would just start running on the breaks. And then I don't even know how I came across, or I saw something about a 50-mile run called the Mountain Masochist 50-miler, which is in Virginia. And I kind of, that was just like intriguing, like, holy crap, I didn't know people do that. And then it was just more of the kind of the mystery of it. Like, can I do this? Is it something that I'm even able to do? And that was kind of the driving focus of it, is can I even do this? And am I able to do it? And that's what got me, it's just an interesting sport altogether.
Yeah, I think a lot of our audience is excited to get into ultras, so I guess describe that first ultra and like why you kept coming back, like what got you to stay with the sport.
I think it can be like intimidating if you think about it, and like I never, like for me it was never like, oh no, 50 or 100 miles. It was just like, like being able to like be detached from the number and just kind of take it a mile at a time during the events. So it was never like super intimidating, but it was more of like, wow, can I do this? But without being like so daunting to, you know, I think anybody can run an ultra that wants to. So it's like more, you know, there's a huge mental aspect to it.
And I think a lot of people, so I obviously get to know you better than most, but Alyssa's known you longer, so that's fun. A lot of people know that you're a teacher, and they kind of assume that, but it's not what you went to school for. So why was that, and like what, I guess, what caught your passion in school?
I guess studying exercise physiology, I think the field is just stuck in a box, and it's like unable to move past, you know, the current perceptions that summer long. I remember a textbook that had it was talking about running and was like advocating for heel striking as like the main, and like running, I would be like, oh, this isn't right. And that kind of made me question like what else in these textbooks are maybe not correct or outdated. And you know, the more I talked to professors about it, the more they're like, oh, you know, they're like dismissive about it. So I kind of was like turned off of the whole field, and then kind of got more into more like holistic and alternative kind of, you know, rabbit holes to go down within health and wellness. And teaching, you know, I kind of just stumbled into teaching as well. I moved to the Big Island and started working at a therapeutic program, a wilderness therapy program. And I did that for 3 years. And that's kind of what sparked my kind of desire and passion for teaching and working with kids.
Oh, that makes sense. Was there any, I'm really curious actually about diving down into the more holistic and offbeat, what were some of the ones that maybe you tried and have stuck with you, or ones that you went, oh, yep, there's a reason why most people don't believe this? I'm curious if any ones in particular come to mind.
Oh, like just per, okay, so
I have so many. I'm looking at it going, you have a lot of weird little habits.
I think just a few things that can, you know, there is easy to get started is like ice baths, like taking, we have a chest freezer that we fill with water and keep it at like 35 degrees, and just sitting in that every day for 5 minutes is something kind of, I noticed a huge difference, you know, like beneficial doing it. I think microdosing LSD is something that, you know, most people are so dismissive, and, you know, or even like taking like microdosing THC, LSD, like those are highly beneficial. And if you even mention that, usually people are, oh, those are drugs. And, you know, meanwhile, it's okay to guzzle alcohol and consume endless amounts of sugar, but, you know, microdosing on LSD is like frowned upon. That's kind of, I think that's a little hypocritical there. So just those things. And I think even like recently, you know, ketone esters, like the development of ketone esters, like that's something that I noticed a huge difference in. I've been eating low carb for, you know, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 years.
And you're a vegetarian for 10, which is fun because we always debate that. But so you really legitimately try whatever you're going for.
Just coupling the low carb and ketone esters, I feel like is game changing for endurance. And it's something that I think people are also dismissive about. It could be considered a little fringe, but it's like highly beneficial for recovery, for you know. So those are some things that, you know, just a few things that are kind of considered probably fringe that I encourage anyone to kind of to dabble in and to learn more about. It's all about self-reflecting. I think that's the kind of the cool thing about it. Or that's what I enjoy most, is just to kind of try new things out and, you know, kind of and seeing what works, what doesn't work, and just kind of reflecting on the whole process of it is where I get the most enjoyment.
Do you think that can be applied, I guess, do you think that it's a pretty individual pursuit in that regard? Because I think so often we get stuck into these kind of greater good training philosophies, and it really is I'm going to ask you this. Do you think it's very specific, or do you think there are some general principles that can be applied?
I think there's definitely a lot of principles that can be applied. I think a lot of the training, you know, what's considered the standard training approaches have been, you know, are written to more to be like, to be a consumer, you know, like buy this, buy these gels, you need a gel on your run, you need to be buying this and that and the other. And it's more like those kind of things are just, I think, just throw that stuff out. I think the main, you know, everyone's body is different. So it's, it's kind of like an individual trial and error, I feel like, for the most part. But there's a few, I think the consumption of sugar is the one thing I think that, you know, is like agreeable through science, that it's like detrimental to people, that, you know, like consuming way too much sugar and simple carbohydrates for either training or, you know, is detrimental to people's health. So I think besides that, I think, you know, everyone's body is different, but I think sugar is the one thing that most people can agree on is, you know, toxic, but it's hard to, you know, people love it, so it's hard to give it up.
He's looking me in the eyes as I had a bag of Skittles for lunch.
Yeah.
You're pregnant, it's fine.
But so I kind of want to follow up on that a little, because I feel like you tapped into something that we discuss a lot, and hopefully we don't offend anybody, but I think it's kind of a hot topic for both you and I. So I feel like most runners get injured, literally the statistic is annually, and they get burned out. And I would love for you to share your thoughts on why that has happened, because I think the single, like, you've done some cool things racing, and, you know, you're debatably fairly fast and talented and all of those things. But I think the thing that stands out to me that makes you unique as a runner is you haven't really been injured in 20 years of running consistently. And so I'd love to hear kind of some of your thoughts on that.
I think I guess I don't have any attachment to like outcome for, like, I don't consider myself competitive, so I don't care about, you know, if I'm running like a race or something, it's not, I don't really care about the outcome. It's more just the process of pushing myself. So I think just, you know, I'm not hung up on times, or I think a big area I think that a lot of people go wrong on is like training or running way too hard on a daily basis. So like just a simple philosophy, I don't know, Alyssa, if you've ever read anything by Dr. Phil Maffetone or like Arthur Lydiard, just kind of those approaches that are the ones that I've kind of gravitated to over the years. And it's more just about kind of like low intensity training, like the benefits of that. So most of my runs are super easy, you know, relatively, you know, I guess Phil Maffetone's kind of approach is you take your heart rate, like 180 minus your heart rate, into like, you know, very rarely get your heart rate above that. So that's kind of a benchmark for kind of people to just go out and see, like,
or like,
where's your heart rate?
You literally know? For you going double the pace on your normal miles that you do for a hard mile.
Yeah, so it's kind of either, it's like the overload, you know, kind of approach. It's similar to that, where it's like most of the time it's easy, but when I go hard, it's like really hard. You know, it's not like a 6 or 7 minute mile. It's like a harder, you know, a way harder effort to get to that sort of stimulus. And that's the way I feel like that's how I've been able to stay injury free, is to not overdo it on a daily basis. Even though it's fun to go out and just, you know, hammer miles, we all enjoy it, but it's, you know, it's the stress hormones released from doing that is pretty negative effect on our health.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's so interesting looking at the philosophy back when my parents were athletes, back in like they still are, sorry, mom and dad, but I mean when they were in their prime, and it's, you know, the 80s and 90s where there was so much emphasis on just going as hard as you possibly could and going level three. And I very specifically remember going cross country skiing with one of my mom's friends, and she hammered the entire time, and I was absolutely miserable. It was so hard and so unfun because it was just painful. And so I've heard a lot about it. I've done a bit of reading, but I'm such an advocate all the time of slowing down. I tell my athletes that and myself that a lot. And especially with endurance training, I mean, you just have to have differentiation. Because if you're always in the middle, it just doesn't work, and you're tired all the time. So
the philosophy behind it is like you're kind of training you're training your body to be more efficient. Like, you know, you start out at a certain heart rate, like 180 minus your age, and say a number is like 145, and then you can run, you know, a 9 minute mile at that 145 heart rate. But over time, you could be able to run like a 6 minute mile at the same heart rate. So it's, you're kind of training your body to be more efficient at a you know, at a given effort. So it just makes a lot of sense on many levels, but it just takes a lot of patience and time to develop that.
Yeah, it takes just so much, and I still find this, but it's just setting aside the ego of, like, who cares what Strava says? Who cares what they're doing? Like, it's about your process. And I think that's probably what relates to the competitive, or not lack of competitive, but just that ego is not on the line, which it sounds like you have a really good perspective in that regard.
Yeah, and like health is kind of my number one goal is just health and longevity. Like that's like the only, that's all there is really, because I feel like our health is all we have, so nothing else really matters. So I just want to be healthy and feel good, not run down and hobbling around and tired all the time.
Oh, it makes total sense. Also, too, actually, I'm really curious how you feel about high mileage versus low mileage training, or is there, you know, a stage in life for this to exist and not?
I think it depends. Yeah, it's like individual. Like, I've kind of tried both, and it's really, you know, it's kind of crazy how different people respond to different things. But I found for myself that around like the 60 to 70 miles a week is kind of like this, you know, a sweet spot. It's kind of considered probably low mileage to most people that run ultras, but just working a full-time job and the stress of that is like, you know, that 60 to 70 miles is kind of like, I feel like the sweet spot for me. And I actually kind of recently read an interesting study that kind of talked about like people that have faster twitch fibers, higher volume could be detrimental. And I feel like I kind of reached that point too, of, around like past 80 or 90 miles, it kind of, it feels like that point of diminishing return. Do I feel more run down and I'm maybe not getting the effect, just feeling more run down than energized?
Yeah, we've actually talked about this one a lot, Alyssa, because I'm the opposite. I think like for me to perform well, I do better in the 80 to 120 range. And we both have tried like 120 to 140. We did it as an experiment and it was pretty miserable for a few months. Yeah. Like we had fun, but it was also like, it was rough, and we really like dove into, does high mileage work better? And it definitely, I think it's so genetic.
Some, some people thrive on, you know, on higher mileage and some people don't. And I just feel more run down on the higher, with a higher mileage.
I guess that kind of runs into, sorry, did you have something, Alyssa?
Well, I was just going to add, first of all, I remember, wasn't it right before you went to, I can't remember what it was called. But I remember you guys going into 2140 and being like, wow, yeah, that's a lot of mileage. And then I think, Alyssa, you're a big dumb idiot. You used to run 180 something miles for 3+ months straight. So you have nothing to say. But anyway, I always forget that period of my life happened. So yes, very interesting that you've already done some of that testing on yourself. But Alex, go for it.
I was just going to kind of go, I think this is actually, it kind of goes well with it. So one of the questions I had is, you know, like, what are you currently training for? And I wrote an article on it that maybe I'll be sharing on our Patreon, but kind of the differences in you versus the guy that you're currently training with, like what that, like how that looks, even though you guys have a similar, you know, goal. Yeah.
I think this is the first time that I've ever kind of like actually periodized like training and effort and like throwing in some more speed. Like usually I've just been stubborn and like sticking with like the pure like Lydiard, like higher volume, low intensity. And I've never even like wanted to risk like speed work or anything or even like burst. But I feel like, you know, I make like the progressive runs. So like, you know, like 1 week, you know, like week one, like 2 miles at like a race pace effort, week three, you know, week two, 2 miles again, and week four, like just like gradually moving up the miles, like the mileage at the intensity. And I feel like that's a healthy way to you know, run hard but stay injury free.
So actually, I'm curious, have you ever had a coach, or is this all been from your experience in college and research on your own and talking with others?
Yeah, I'm way too stubborn to ever have a coach or to ever listen to anyone's advice. Like I always say my advice is to not listen to any advice. That's always been my kind of my motto of running. It's kind of like such an individualized thing. And I feel like that's part of the joy of it, is just kind of experimenting And so I've just always had an interest in the human body and how it works, and love just reading articles and reading books and kind of just trying different things out. So yeah, I think I'm way too stubborn to have a coach or to listen to anyone.
And you married one.
Yeah.
I would say we definitely have had a lot of discussions and played with ideas together though. So I appreciate that.
The coaching would be more for like a performance. I've never really been interested in performance or, doing better. So I haven't even had the need, because it's not something I'm interested in. It's more just the journey of it.
So I guess going off of that, what is your perspective and purpose behind racing or going to races?
I think it's just a fun way to kind of push myself to the limit. It's like, without having a lot of other people, it's kind of hard to just go out on your own and run your absolute as hard as you can. But with these other, in the kind of race setting, it's fun just to kind of go see what the limit is, kind of. And that's kind of, it's just fun to participate every now and then.
That's his version of a biannual speed workout.
Oh, yeah.
So what's this is the question I don't know the answer to. So what's the favorite location that you've traveled for a race, or the favorite location that you've gone and done just to do running? Like, you can do a few. It doesn't have to be like your set one.
I think my favorite location for running has definitely been probably Northern Italy. Just going up there. I was going to do a race called the Lavaredo.
Yes.
But just running around the mountains there and the trails up there were just so spectacular. And then going down into like the Tuscany region and the coastal areas were just, it was just like the most ideal places to just run and just soak it all in. Like, the culture there is just beautiful and amazing, and amazing food, amazing places to run. So I think Italy, and then Bulgaria. I went to Bulgaria, and it's kind of the same. It's the mountains, the people, the food were just spectacular. That's where I kind of, my bucket list place to go right now would be Albania. There's a trail called the Peak of the Balkans Trail that goes from like Albania and goes into like Serbia and Kosovo, and that's kind of like number one on my list of places I want to go.
Well, I can tell you, well, first of all, how do you feel about a September family trip to Cru Alissa and Tour de Jean, get back to Northern Italy? That would be amazing. And I will say, I've been to Albania, and it is a wild place.
You've been? Holy smokes.
Yes. It is. I almost got abducted in Albania on a trail run. So I'm going to tell you.
Holy crap.
Yeah, that's it was quite terrifying. I think you would probably run into less problems. But it is beautiful. And also, I mean, it is not like other places I've been. It's quite a place. So
yeah, that's kind of the appeals. It just seems so rugged, and like, and the small villages just look amazing. You run, it's kind of like the hut run from like hut to hut, but run from like village to village and stay in a place. That would be so cool.
Absolutely.
How did you almost get abducted?
All right, we'll get into that story. So we went over for, just very quickly, first of all, we thought that the ferry was going to capsize, because you always hear about, like, very remote, unregulated ferries going between Italy and Albania, and then you realize you're on one, and you're like, oh shit, we shouldn't have got out in this storm. Like, that was a bad idea. And you could hear people throwing up in the cabins, and it was something. So we got there, and we went because Cody, and then some of our friends from Italy, he was also a climber. Two of them wanted to go climb, because the climbing in Albania is unbelievable. It's some of the best in the world. Like, the mountains, the climbing, it's amazing, and it's so untouched, but because it's also really dangerous. So there's a couple parts to it. But so we drove on this back road. I mean, it's like the roads that you see in Pakistan, Afghanistan, where it's along a cliff and you're barely scraping by construction that's on it, and you think you're probably going to fall off, and it's dusty and dirty and blah, blah. So we get out to this climbing spot that they find, and I decide I'm going to go on a trail run. I think it's like, you know, it's, I see couples out taking Instagram photos. So I'm like, ah, this is safe. It'll be fine. And I come back and it's getting dark because we'd gotten there pretty late. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't really want to just sit in the car. I'm just going to kind of go back and forth, waiting for them to come down from the climb. And I'm coming back up to the van, and a car pulls up next to me full of like three or four dudes. And they start asking, what are you doing? Why are you here? Where are you from? And I just keep going like, I'm just running. My husband's right there. I'm Italian. And they're like, where are you from? Like, not believing that I'm Italian. And I'm like, the last thing I'm going to tell them is I'm American. Because, wow, yeah. Wouldn't that be great for them to snag an American girl? So I keep going, oh, I'm Italian. Oh, I'm Italian. And they're like, no, you're not. No, you're not. And then I get into the car and I'm just like, nope, I'm not talking to you. And they kept trying to ask me questions. And I get in the car, I lock the doors, and I hid like in between the seats, and they had driven off. And then I saw lights come back and forth, and I am sweating bullets underneath the seats. And I know. So, and the crazy thing is, my husband's like, or one of our best friends is watching whole thing from the rock, hearing the conversations, and he's trying to like yell down and scare away, and is telling Cody like, you've got to come now, but also it's really dangerous to rock climbing if you go too fast in the dark. So they're watching this whole thing happen, and I have never been more scared, like hunched in between two seats, than I was at that moment. I don't exactly know what their intentions were, but I don't think they were good. So yeah. That was what? My experience in Albania.
Well, you really sold me. Now I'm extra excited to go to Albania with Billy.
You know, it was nuts. Go ahead, Billy.
I was gonna say I just became like obsessed with like the whole Balkans, like that whole region, and I was like reading every book about it, about the history and like all the, you know, about all the conflicts they've had and all the different cultures there. And it just seems like such an interesting place. Like, there's so much diversity and so much culture. And, you know, it just looks like, and it's like an unknown. Like, Albania was so closed off during like the communist periods that it's like kind of only now recently that they've been like opening up to tourism and kind of allowing the outside world in.
Absolutely. And I think too, it's fascinating to be in any country where communism is still such a present force there, where it's just, it's so, you can see it, you can feel it, you can.
Yeah, and architecture, yeah. There's all these, like, kind of boulder, or, yes. Like, not, like, kind of bunkers or something. Did you see a lot of those?
And it's very, I mean, it's very third world in many ways. Like, there's just, kind of outside the few cities that they've really like buffed up, it's just so much poverty and so much decay and like so much just like massive cement blocks of things, which you can kind of see in Prague as well, that they're changing from that. But yeah, the prevalence of
architecture.
And you can feel it. It's weird. I don't know how to explain it. It's unbelievable to go to. I will say, honestly, one of the most interesting places I've ever gone, and such a different perspective on life in so many ways.
All right, so I'm going to rein you two in because this is a running podcast. So let's get off the
run.
All right, we're going to go run in Albania, I promise, at some point. But I'm not letting Billy leave me because I've almost been abducted here in Hawaii. So we're just going to, Billy has to run next to me, which means extra slow. Yeah. What, I guess, is the hardest ultra or race that you think you've done? And it could just, I mean, it could be a 5K that you pushed yourself super hard. It could be a 100 miler. I don't know. What do you think is the hardest challenge you've had?
a race called the Hellgate 100K in Virginia, and it starts, it's like in December, so it's cold, and it starts at 11 p.m. So it starts in the, you know, the middle of the night, and it's just, it was just, yeah, the name, like, it lives up to the name, Hellgate. You know, it's like these snowy, icy trails in the dark, like barren. You know, all the leaves are off the tree, so there's nothing compelling in the scenery, and it's just, it was just misery. I think I tried to drop out at, you know, like mile 60 or something, or no, that is 100K. I tried to drop out at like mile 40, and like they told me that I couldn't drop out at that aid station, but the adrenaline of convincing myself that I was going to drop out and was excited, like, hell yeah, I'm done, screw this, and like just the adrenaline from that, like, got me to the finish, and they're like, no, you can't, and it was like deflating, and then but I had that adrenaline from thinking I was going to be done and excitement, and then I finished it somehow.
That is an awesome reason for finishing.
I know. Like, people's eyes were, like, freezing that year. Like, people's eyes were, like, frozen over. It's like, I didn't even realize that was possible.
Yeah, yeah, that's something. Yeah, when you start getting icicles in your eyelashes, it's like, ah, this isn't super fun.
Yeah, so, neither of us do well in the cold, so.
Yeah, fair enough. I've become soft in my old age. almost 28, I'm old over here.
So, I was just saying, it's a little insulting, but yeah.
sorry. No, it's okay. More lived.
Belly's my old man, so okay. You know.
Yeah.
So, going into more depth in the racing, this is also really interesting because I think a lot of people's identity, again, and ego are tied into race results. But if you come out of a race, how do you feel about a race that is, you know, successful, I guess, in ways versus one that perhaps could be classified as failure? How do you mentally kind of differentiate and learn from them?
I guess I don't have any attachment to like the outcome. So I think that Hellgate is probably, I'd rather have like an experience like that than it just be easy. And it's, you know, so I think the more adversity is kind of like, you know, I guess, would you I walk away feeling better from something that I like struggled and like overcame, or even having to drop out? It doesn't really bother me. It's just like a learning. I think of it like a learning experience. You know, it's not, you know, I don't think of it like a success or a failure. It's more of like, oh, I learned this from that experience. Yeah. And really like kind of the most recently, the Lavaredo, like it was really just an excuse to go to Italy and travel, like kind of travel around, but like the race, it was like there's like thousands of people like crammed in to like the starting chute. So I get, you know, I show up before the start of the race. It's like 11 p.m. at night, and there's like thousands of people just standing there, and like I try to like get crammed in and like in the middle of these, of all the people, and like getting like poked in the eye with like trekking poles, and people are like turning, they're strapped to people's backs, and it was like almost like it's like panic inducing like scenario for me, like being jammed into all these people is like, you know, an announcer with like a giant jumbotron screen and bright lights, and the announcer speaking like, you know, a million words per second and like in Italian, like loud, like, blah, 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 and like getting like poked in the eye, and I'm like cold, like just like sweating bullets because I'm so uncomfortable with the situation. And then like the race started, and I was like, ah, screw this, I'm done. I'd rather just go. Like I dropped out of like mile 10 just because I was just, you know, that just being in that situation was. Yeah, you know, I didn't like it. So I kind of learned it. Like, you know, I don't really enjoy big events or big races. It's more just small, kind of fun, you know, just smaller events are more what I enjoy.
And I guess going on that, since you have self-coached for so long, and that's kind of the point of our podcast, is to help people find resources or philosophies or whatever things that they can identify with and learn from. What are some of your favorite resources? Are there books you've read, websites you go to, whether it's food or running related, like what are things that you currently use or find value in?
I think you definitely, if people aren't familiar with Phil Maffetone, just kind of reading some of his books and some of his articles, it's like a huge, highly beneficial, just for overall health and wellness. So like him, and then Peter Defty of Vespa, the company Vespa. Like it's really kind of what he's developed is called like optimized fat metabolism. like OFM, and it's like a whole kind of just like protocol for optimal, you know, performance for your body. But kind of those two, like film mofetone and then the optimized fat metabolism, were kind of the two things that I really enjoy and think there's a lot of value in. And also the kind of new, like the ketone aid, like the ketone esters, like reading studies about the benefits of ketone esters. So like kind of those three things are, I think people can get a lot of value out of that.
I've got to pick up the Mofetone book. I've heard so much about it. I've seen it around and I have yet to actually read it. So I will put that on my.
And he's been on a ton of podcasts too. And I think there was a podcast called Primal Endurance. It was just like nonstop. Like it was going on. They had like dozens and dozens of episodes, but just a lot of really good stuff in there.
I think you'll come to the same conclusion with him that I have, Alyssa. Like, I personally think he's an idiot when it comes to nutrition, but a genius when it comes to sports science and mobility and running and aerobic fitness. But that's my personal. I'd love to like get an argument with him. Like,
yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I think there's no denying the lower carbohydrate approach for endurance.
For your body.
I think for any, you know, for anybody, really.
We're going to get in a boxing match. I don't know.
I was also going to say, I feel like there's a lot of nutritionists, especially female nutritionists, trying to help female athletes who are struggling with fueling that would fight you right now.
Well, I think, too, we have discussed, and I think it is coming more to light, that low carb isn't healthy for female athletes.
Lower carb. I mean, it doesn't have to be just, like, that's the thing, is, like, people get kind of boxed in with this dogmatic, you know, approaches where, that's why I like the optimized fat metabolism with by Peter Deffy, because it's not really this dogmatic approach. It's more just like lower carb, higher fat. Like it's, you know, it's not this dogmatic thing. Like you have to keep your carbohydrates below this set number of grams. It's like none of that dogmatic stuff. It's just more of like an overall outline, and it's not this dogmatic approach.
And he was the one I got to run with, right?
Oh yeah.
That's so right, I got to run with him, Alyssa, across the years, and I was already at the point, like, I was kind of over the race. I wanted to, this is when I got to meet Billy's parents the first time, and they had, like, flown out, you know, specifically to meet my parents and to meet me, and I was so over the race because it was so cold, and I had, like, big goals for a 48-hour run, and I'm like, you know, I just don't want to be miserable for a week, and I don't want his family to see me and that like hobbling, you know, pathetic state that I'll be 40 some hours in. And I was like, I'm just going to go sit in the RV my parents brought and hang out with, you know, the family. And I started running with Peter. And it was really interesting to me because I will say of the nutritional people out there in this sport, even though he doesn't have like, he's not, you know, he's not a nutritionist, he's not a doctor. He is probably one of the most self-educated people I've talked to. And even though I thought we were going to just have a boxing match because I wanted him to explain like the low carb and the ketones and all of that to me in a manner that was explaining anything other than like selling a product. I was really impressed by his like flexibility on, well, it doesn't work for every athlete. And well, you can definitely look into like healthy carb sources and, you know, potatoes. And he doesn't advocate running on low carbs, which is where I think I get into the issue. I don't mind if people want a carb cycle or go lower carb or have cleaner carbs. But when people say you should go run 100 miles and not eat carbs, then I have a problem.
Yeah, I don't like he's not advocating for that. No.
And I think that's great because I kind of expected him to be more dogmatic. And so
I think with him and Phil Mofetone, like they've been kind of ostracized in the endurance community their whole careers for their points of, you know, for their philosophy. And it's coming, you know, like, and everything that I've experienced kind of leads me to their philosophy. Like, oh, that's kind of more in line with my own beliefs and just based on experience. And I think if people can kind of, you know, think outside of the box a little bit, that they'll their approaches can be beneficial, you know, because that's kind of what you are told when you start running. No, you have to, you know, you have to drink, you know, you have to eat goos every run you go on and blah, 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 blah. And it's like all this consumerism nonsense. It's just unnecessary and detrimental to health and not even perform. And it's detrimental to performance, too.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I don't, I hear some people be like, oh, I eat a gel every 20 minutes. I'm like, I would not run if I had to do that. I would hate myself. So I, you know, I think there's so much balance to it, and I think there's so much nuance to it, and also just experience of what works best for you. And I think that's what I admire so much about the two of you, is that you're not telling someone to do it if you haven't tried it yourself, and you're willing, both of you are willing to experiment on your own training, on your own diet, and I mean recovery strategies and such, and have, you know, the personal experience to back what you're advocating. So good job, you
exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, advocating for like microdosing on LSD, or, you know, taking mushrooms and having like a, you know, like a planned trip and having like a, you know, guided experiences could be so beneficial, you know, just for like being able to like kind of get in tune with your own, with your own body, with your own mind. It's like,
you couldn't pay Billy to advocate somebody to run fast, but you could he would take money to advocate for people to do mushrooms. Like,
I mean, it could be life changing for people, you know, like, that's what I'm happy with now.
It's one of my goals with Alyssa. Yeah. She's never played those games, but it's one of my life goals, is to get Alyssa to try mushrooms.
Most people have, you know, you have this like negative thoughts about it. Like, oh, like, you know, what comes to mind is like high schoolers taking them and just like staring at a wall or something. You know, it's so much more than that if you're in the right situation and in the right frame of mind for it.
Absolutely. I mean, I've heard a lot of very positive things. And I mean, if you look at the world's best artists and creative minds, I mean, I think that did unlock so much potential there. So,
and it's like there's a letting go, an element of like letting go to it. It's like, I think people that are like, have to be in control of situations, have to be in control all the time, will struggle with psychedelics, because you're in some ways like you have to let go of that a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, that's super interesting. I guess I'll have to come visit you guys. I mean, woo-hoo! I was really planning to anyway, but for other reasons too. Well,
we convinced her, finally. It's been like 7 podcasts in a row that we've mentioned mushrooms.
It really has, actually. So switching a little bit to, I guess, a different... Actually, before I get to this, I'll actually let Alex ask you this. What do you listen to when you run? Do you listen to music?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah,
okay.
Usually like 99% of the time it's nothing. But I mean, I feel like music plays in my head, or like something is like playing in my head. But I guess the reason I would listen to music more if I had like a device that was like, I used to have like an iPad, or no, what is it? iPod.
Yeah.
iPod Nano, or like the small ones.
Yeah.
Like, they were so much more convenient. Now I just have a phone, and it's like this clunker, freaking mini, you know, computer. I'm not going to be carrying that thing around on a run.
He's looking at my massive phone with so much judgment right now.
So I think if I had like a device that was like, you know, small and easy to use, like I would listen to music more when I run.
Yeah, it's such a bummer. I have tried many times, because, I mean, with tour and bigger things, really, like, I just want to get through the night and not be a sad panda. They don't make small music devices anymore. It's so hard to find.
I had bought some for our last, when we were doing, like, the 140-mile weeks, and I was a sad panda for all of them. But I had bought this, I don't even remember the brand name, so I'm not going to slam them, but I bought like 3 or 4 of them, and they were supposed to essentially be like iPod shuffles, like really tiny, like 10 hours of storage, 20 hours of playing, and they didn't work. They were always disconnecting, and it was just a big nightmare.
They need to revive like the Nanos, or like a small, like, you know,
right? It would be so good. I totally agree. And then also you could leave your phone at home, which would be super nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you can.
I guess they figure now that everyone's carrying their phone 24/7, so they don't even bother making those anymore. But like, it's such a nice, it's such a good, like a different experience, like running somewhere. Like we live next to a crater called Kilauea Iki, and it's like, in some days, so when you drop down into it, it's like a, you know, a couple hundred feet drop, but it's like the whole crater can be engulfed in like fog and mist, and like listening to music in there is like such a cool and like different experience than like running, you know, just running through. Okay. The music definitely adds, you know, adds a cool feels to the places.
So I'll share something quirky about you, I guess, or I'm going to make you share something quirky. I guess, what is on your Spotify playlist or your music playlist? Like, what, I guess your pump up music is not what I would consider most people's music choice.
Oh my God. Everything from like, from jazz to like indie rock to folk to punk. So it's just like, I guess I would, you know, folk and punk are probably the two genres that I listen to the most. And like my pump up music, I guess, is like
smooth jazz.
Tenor. It's like this guy, a saxophone, like a tenor saxophone is called Coleman Hawkins. And for whatever reason, like, I just feel like I'm in the song and like every note, like, I don't know. So that's my kind of like pump up music is like a like more like jazz or just something that like, but it has a feeling to it. You know, I really get more inspired by the feeling than like a loud, you know, music song with high cadence. That doesn't do it for me. It's like the feel of it.
That makes sense. I mean, it's, I actually am extremely careful about how much music I listen to because I can feel my heart rate spike if I put music on at the wrong time. Like it, today I had a 20-minute hard interval-ish in the middle of my run and I put on music because I was putting myself in the mindset, but I was kind of waiting to start it to get to a certain trail and I turned the music on and I was like, oh God, there goes the heart rate. Like it is it is such a visceral response for me that I have to be really careful about when I use it. So
yeah, that makes sense.
It does. So do you play any musical instruments?
Yeah, I play the banjo. So I started, I've had it for, you know, years. And then last year when the kind of pandemic started, and we were like confined to home, I really just kind of like made up my mind that that's what I wanted to learn, like really dive into and play, you know. So it's been I've been playing every day for, you know, since last year. So for a whole year, playing at least, you know, I set a goal of playing at least 10 minutes every day and I've stuck with it. And it's so fulfilling to learn something new and then to play an instrument. It's like something that I've never been able to sort of break through. Like I kind of, with instruments, I feel like it's kind of like math. You know, like the way that they work, and like I've never been good at, like, my mind is just not like math oriented, like, so I've had a hard time like just picking up an instrument. So I kind of like said, like, screw it, now's the time, like I'm gonna, you know, it's like, you know, like nothing's gonna hold me back. So I just spent, you know, hours watching YouTube videos and just playing and practicing it, and it's like, it's cool to see that, like, wow, the practice really does like pay off, like you really do progress and learn. It's kind of one of those things where like, oh, I'm never gonna learn, why, you know, why bother? And it's like breaking through that sort of negative kind of self-talk is, you know, it's cool to see it pay off.
And our marriage survived him learning the banjo. So.
that's the impressive part.
Right? It was actually really funny because we're into like two types of Netflix or, you know, whatever. We don't even have a TV, but streaming shows. And it's like 100% British cooking shows or, you know, if we really need some diversity, I'll like drag him into like some sort of like home redesign or tiny home film or, you know, whatever. And we actually watched a whole episode, and I have no idea what show it was on, about like this couple that wanted to move into this tiny home.
Oh, God.
We were like, their marriage is not going to last because she's like, he needs a soundproof room for when he plays the banjo. It's the most horrible instrument on the planet. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's okay to like dislike it a little, but now he's gotten to the point I really enjoy it. So there's like, you know, musical balance. It's not just the exact same, you know, chord over and over and over again. So I guess moving on, not that these haven't all just been kind of fun questions, because I feel like when you've done podcasts, it's been so run performance focus that it's kind of lost its interest. But we kind of have a little round of like pop questions that are way off topic.
Right.
And I'm gonna steal one of Alyssa's that she usually uses. What is your bucket list race or place to go for a run? There's no money cap, unlimited funds, and no COVID. So you can go anywhere.
So a race wouldn't be, so zero races I'm interested in, but as we've already talked about, the peak of the Balkans Trail, that's kind of number one. So Albania, here we come.
Woo, woo.
I'm moderately excited now.
It'll be awesome. It'll be super cool. So if you could, I think I'm stealing Alex's. If you could go on a run with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh my God. That's dead or alive. Jesus.
And they might actually not be runners, but in this world they are. So it's like you have an hour to, you know, talk to Jesus if he exists or whatever, whoever you want.
I guess the first person that came into my head was Walt Whitman. I like his writings and his kind of philosophy on life. And love to spend more time. And he just seems like he would have been a crazy guy to get to know a little.
That's why I married him, Alyssa. That right there. The weirdness never stops fascinating me.
I mean, yes.
I'll go, but we've never had that answer. So we've had like 12 Michelle Obamas, but you were the first to say Walt Whitman. So
right.
So I would say I'm gonna steal one of Alyssa's questions since she did that to me.
You did what? It for her first.
I know. now we're just stealing each other's.
I mean,
what is your favorite? She usually asks for post race, but I know you're not hungry after races because I've just seen you lay in a pathetic puddle. So what is your favorite like treat meal, carbohydrate limiting, not existing, like what I guess what would your naughty, like what are your favorite bad foods?
I don't know, it's hard. I'm not really like food motivated or driven. So I mean, I enjoy like baked good, any sort of like baked goods and pastry or like pastries and stuff. I kind of like coffee shop pastries and stuff like that. I really like, but avoid most of the time. So I guess that would be up there. Lackluster answer, I know, but I mean, nothing.
I mean, in Italy, they're pretty great. And I will admit, yeah, I spend a lot of time just staring at them because I can't eat them. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, sad. So sad.
And I developed a gluten intolerance in Italy, so it's like, meh, meh, meh.
Yeah, gelato and pastries there. Like, you can't go wrong.
You really can't. And also, Alex, we might be friends because I might match Billy's weirdness that I would probably want to go on a run with Shakespeare, so...
Oh, that's, nice.
That's probably like odd people. I like all of you.
Excellent. So, last fun question. If you had an indulgence of the adult nature, pick your choice of what that may be, what would it be?
An indulgence of
like alcohol, like, drug, what are you? Yeah. What are you?
I guess it would then. If people consider it an indulgence, like psychedelics would be out, you know, I think it's a tool, you know, to tool to better myself or to, you know, have a different outlook on life. Or,
but it's not your Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
Oh, something on like that. A glass of wine then, I guess, you know, nothing, getting crazy with a glass of wine. Like, I don't really drink a lot or like much at all. So a glass of wine here and there is a, you know, feels like really, you know, really, I don't know, it just feels good to have a glass of wine, like feels earthy, or I don't know.
And then I guess I will wrap up with I think you're gonna have the most unique answer of anybody we've had, because you're not gonna share your website or your 20 ways to reach out to you. I already know that. But if people want to find you, other than through me, which is how everyone
I was gonna you. Say through you.
Is there a online resource, social media, website, anything that you want to share?
No, not that I don't really keep up with anything or have anything. So Volcano Hawaii, see you in Volcano Hawaii on a trail.
Carrier pigeon. That'd be great.
Right.
All
last
day.
Bottle as well, too.
Oh man. Well, this has been as more fun than I could have hoped, and I had high expectations. So thank you both for a great conversation and a lot of laughs.